You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Ken Rolla. Ken is a natural health educator and inventor from New Smyrna Beach, Florida. He's been teaching classes and retreats since 1993 on rejuvenation and cellular regeneration using raw and sprouted vegetarian food, herbs, food-based natural supplements, detoxification, emotional healing, reprogramming of limiting unconscious beliefs, ancient esoteric techniques, and cutting-edge science. With a background in electrical engineering, physics, and computer science for 23 years, he worked on a variety of jobs in the medical industry from the patient level to the national policy level. A cutting-edge researcher, Ken has studied with many pioneers in the natural health movement. He has done groundbreaking research into monatomic minerals and ormus, which work at the quantum levels. His work on scalar devices has had profound effects on negative fields produced by cell phones, chemtrails, and radiation. He has also had a powerful near-death experience and contact with ETs. You can find out more about his pioneering health research at www.freshandalive.com. So let's welcome Ken to the show now. Hi, Ken. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I heard your show on Red Ice the other day, and I thought you were absolutely fantastic, and the array of your knowledge and the depth of your understanding about how things work is astounding. So I'm just really thrilled to have you on tonight.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, one of the things that I'm personally curious about, and I know a lot of people have tried, is one of the research on the consciousness effects and health effects that are produced by monatomic elements and ormus. And this goes further than just the elements. You describe the whole chain of life as it comes in. But I thought we'd start there to see what you can share with us.
Okay, well, first of all, for people who don't know what ormus or monoatomic elements are, very simply put, they are certain minerals or elements on the periodic chart that can exist. Normally, they're metals, but they can exist as, rather than the metallic forms, they can exist as ceramic white powders. And that's not terribly interesting or significant, but what makes them get into that form is that normally these metals, what makes them metals is that their atoms are bound together very strongly in a three-dimensional grid pattern of some type, distinctive to each metal. But going through certain processes, you can actually break them apart and have those atoms exist as individual discrete atoms, which according to conventional physics is impossible because metal atoms have very, very strong charges and they want to grab onto each other and create a crystalline lattice structure or a grid pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And so by photosynthesis or fermentation, vortexing water and magnetic fields and scalar fields and other techniques, you can put these minerals into forms that are monoatomic, and when they become monoatomic, they have really, really weird properties and really weird physics. They become superconductors. They can pick up extremely weak fields. So, for example, in soil, bacteria can eat minerals in the soil and turn them into monoatomics, and those monoatomics in soil can pick up all of the gravitational and other fields from all of the celestial bodies around Earth for many, many light years away and impart those frequencies into the soil, into water and into the crystals in the soil. Same thing in our bodies. We have them in our bodies. They're in plants. there in animals. And the more of them that you get into your body through food and water, the faster that you can heal and manifest your reality and all sorts of things. So they're very regenerative in the human body. They're very healing to the body. They're also where the mind meets the physical body. Doctors talk about the mind-body connection. Well, there, you know, if it's not some esoteric metaphor, then there's got to be an actual mechanism. And it turns out that these superconducting minerals are where consciousness meets physicality in the body. And so there are a lot of implications from all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also a lot of applications outside of health and the human body. Because these superconductors, they're anti-gravitational. They're also multidimensional. They exist in multiple dimensions of time and space simultaneously. And so they can be used for communication. So, for example, there's a German company who's working on a cell phone that can have perfect clarity anywhere in the cosmos, you know, any distance apart, because it's using scalar waves and monoatomics to transmit information.
Mm.
And so you could, for example, have a cell phone on Earth and a cell phone on Mars with perfect clarity using this kind of technology. Also, Argonne National Labs and some other folks have used it for dimension travel and time travel and space travel of objects and spacecraft. You can coat spacecraft with monoatomic gold and other monoatomic elements, and you can actually transport them through time and space. And so they've been doing experiments that are very covert now with that. So there's a lot of different applications for this, and it's the cutting edge kind of right now with monoatomics and the technologies that people work on. It's in its infancy, probably about where the computer industry was maybe in the 1940s. So not many people know about it, and yet it's very, very cutting edge, and it can solve a lot of the world's problems.
Mm. There are also implications for the increase in consciousness and in some of the psychic abilities. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. The way it works in the body is, first of all, where do these minerals come from? They're made in nature in soil, for one thing, as I mentioned. And first of all, these monoatomics, the particular elements that are known to be monoatomic right now are the platinum group elements on the periodic chart, so platinum, palladium, rhodium, iridium, osmium, and then gold, silver, copper, mercury. They can all exist in this monoatomic form, and when they go from being metallic to monoatomic, like I said, they all appear in monoatomic form to be white ceramic powders. And so in the human body, when you've got microbes in soil that eat these minerals and break them down into particle sizes of just a few atoms bundled together, those are called angstrom minerals, and plants can uptake them. And also, these bacteria can eat the rocks and create monoatomics, and plants will uptake them as well. So if you've got those particular minerals in the soil and you've got a high bacteria count that will break them down and you put plants in there, then you'll get very strong plants that will uptake these minerals, and they will be very nutrient-dense and very robust, and very hardy and cold and heat-resistant, bug-resistant, and then they'll have high concentrations of these in them, and then when we eat them, it will jack up the monoatomic content in our body, and they will, when we ingest them, they get transported to superconducting junctures along the nervous system and the brain neural pathways and the DNA. The DNA is actually a superconducting antenna that's composed of these monoatomics, or it has these monoatomics in it. Structure.
Wow.
And so the DNA is not the genetic blueprint. It's actually the carrier of the genetic blueprint. This has actually been proven in epigenetics that the pattern for the genetic blueprint is in consciousness itself. And the DNA is a superconducting antenna that picks up that consciousness and brings the pattern into physical reality.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah, so the mind-body connection happens in the DNA, but it also happens all along the nervous system in these superconducting junctures where these minerals deposit that happen to correspond to what the Chinese call the acupuncture meridians, or in Ayurveda they call them the nadis.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those junctures are just little superconducting concentrations of these minerals, and the energy of consciousness is known as scalar energy. That's what physicists are calling it now. You can, you know, it's been called chi and prana and life force and various things, but it's just very high frequency energy that propagates in vortexes. So it spirals in vortexes, and as it's spiraling, it branches out. And all energy in the universe flows that way. It's spiraling and branching as it goes. And so within the body, when it comes in from consciousness, or when consciousness comes in, it's spiraling in and meets these superconducting junctures. It's picked up, and they act like lenses and bring it into physical reality, into 3D. And so this is how, moment by moment, you're creating and recreating your body from the atomic level on up, converting this energy into matter. And so also in the brain neural pathways, you've got these junctures. And so along the spine, you have very large junctures of these superconducting minerals, which correspond to what people call the chakras. And as people who work with chakras know, they've always been symbolized by these, you know, swirling vortexes of energy.
Right.
And they correspond to different colors. And that's because this scalar energy of consciousness, you're, at one level, your brain is generating scalar energy or scalar waves that go out into the quantum field and come back into the physical structure through these superconducting minerals. And so at the chakras and at all the acupuncture meridians, that flow of chi, or that flow of consciousness, comes in and it flows outward. And at the chakras, you have particularly large junctures, and the farther away they are from the brain, that corresponds to different frequencies of the energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that also corresponds to the different colors that, you know, they're represented in chakra charts and stuff. But it's basically your brain is a scalar wave generator, which is just a high frequency, faster than light energy, and it sends it out through the nervous system and the spine, and so it comes out through these superconducting junctures and vortexes outward, and it also flows back inward. And so that's how we recreate our physical body moment by moment, but it's also how we create our external reality moment by moment, because when we have thought with enough duration and intensity, then those thoughts will go out into the quantum field and slow down and coagulate if they've got enough duration and emotional intensity,
mm-hmm.
and turn into matter. And so this whole physical reality that we're living in, this whole 3D universe that we're living in, is really just a holographic manifestation of consciousness. And it's consciousness that brings the scalar energy in and slows it down and coagulates it into matter and the conventional electromagnetic energies that we can see and measure. And so the role of these monatomics is very, very key in this whole process, within our bodies, within plants, within rocks, within all living organisms. And that's how we create our reality collectively.
It seems to me that there would be a disconnect if the plants and the food that we were eating was not full of these monatomic elements. In other words, if they were corrupted in some way, and we have GMO food and chemtrails and various things that are done to animals, which corrupt the meats. And what is the process when these elements are not present? Does that slow down the process of creation, or does it? I know one thing it does.
You nailed it on the head right there. And all the great philosophers and teachers have talked about this for thousands of years, that if you if your physical body becomes toxic, or if the emotions and the mind become toxic, then what will happen is these superconducting junctures will get clogged up with toxins. And that will shut down the superconductivity, and it will most definitely make it more difficult for you to manifest the reality that you are focused on. And, of course, at a physical level, it creates all kinds of imbalance and disease and illness, which further exacerbates all of that. But most definitely, it shuts down your ability to create your reality and particularly be self-aware and connected to all that is, connected to other people and animals and all living beings, connected to yourself. And so you become less aware, you become shut down, you become emotionally stunted, you become less intelligent, and even the physical body becomes less beautiful because these toxins shut down the normal flow of energy that allows your body to manifest in its highest forms. So absolutely, yeah, and the powers that be, of course, know this. I mean, they know this very, very well. And hence that's part of the agenda of creating a toxic food supply and shielding people from the scalar energy that's whipping through the cosmos and coming down from the sun and up from the center of the earth to us. They know very well about that, and that's part of the agenda, is to, you know, to reduce people's ability to be cognizant and aware and create their own reality and rule their own destiny, as opposed to...
Oh, absolutely. It seems that they're doing that on every level, and at levels that we, most people probably would just not even begin to accept as real. For instance, Fukushima and some of the HARP and scalar wave experiments and some of the secret areas where they're doing things that we have no idea about other than through whistleblowers.
Right. Right, precisely. That's very,
but
very
one
true.
Of the things... Yeah.
No, I was going to say, I've worked with a lot of people who have whistleblown and have exposed of a lot of these secrets. So for me, it's not something I've read on the internet, you know, or something I've heard. I've actually worked and witnessed with a lot of this stuff.
What are some of the things that you could share with us that we might want to be aware of?
Well, there's so many things. One I would say is free energy. Is a big one. That's one that typically people get killed or silenced if they are too vocal about it, and they have real solutions for it. But I've worked with people who have developed free energy technology back in the early 90s. I worked with a man named Yul Brown who developed water fuel technology, and he was killed for it. There have been lots of other people who have developed water fuel and other free energy technologies also that have been killed or suppressed. And so I've actually witnessed that technology back in the early 90s. Yul Brown figured out, actually, there was a man named William Rhodes back in the 60s who really, in modern times, figured out water fuel. And I'm guessing he must have known that he wouldn't be able to get it out as a viable fuel source. So he brought out a water fuel welder, which... you can still buy on the market. I forget the name of the company, but there's a company in Arizona that has a water welder that you can buy. And it has really, really weird quantum properties, so it'll weld anything to anything.
Huh.
And Brown, originally, when he came out with his technology, William Rhodes started this in the 60s, and then a man named Andrea Puharich and Yul Brown both took Rhodes' work and developed it. And they both developed water fuel technology and I believe Puharich actually had a water car. And then, of course, both of them were threatened, and Puharich was friends with the Roosevelts, the Rockefellers, apparently, and they warned him not to produce any water-filled technology or else. And so so he didn't. Yul Brown did. And he was... very successful with the development of it, but getting it out to the public, he was threatened and had attempts on his life several times, and he ultimately did get about 2,000 distributors around the world in the U.S. to sell his device, but he could never get it out onto the market because he was stopped at every level by the powers that be. But he, when he died, it kind of died with him until a man named Stanley Meyer in the 80s, and then a few others, some of them who were actually distributors of Yul Brynn's, who later claimed that they had invented it themselves, came out with this water fuel. But basically the way it works is, and those people, by the way, Stanley Meyer was killed within hours of signing a multi-million dollar contract with the military to power their vehicles with water.
Wow.
But the way it works is it's actually fairly simple in concept. You put water in a canister, a cylinder-shaped canister, and inside you have metal pipes of certain lengths and diameters and materials, and you pulse electricity through it at very specific frequencies. And what winds up happening is the pulsing will develop what's called resonance inside the tubes, and it will develop explosive force that will shatter the H2O molecules into hydrogen and oxygen. But rather than separating into hydrogen and oxygen gas, it realigns them so you get HHO gas, which is a fourth phase of water, and it will burn. And it will burn with a blue flame. But when you burn things with it, it has really weird quantum properties. So it actually does alchemy on whatever it burns. It rearranges things at the subatomic level, so it can turn, for example, radioactive materials into non-radioactive elements, or it can take toxic elements and turn them into non-toxic elements. It'll weld anything to anything. I had one of these welders for a couple weeks, and you could weld ceramic to wood or plastic to metal or, you know, stone to metal. I mean, it would weld anything because it welded stuff at the subatomic level. And so so Brown was unsuccessful at getting it out. Stanley Meyer was unsuccessful, and he was killed. And so since then, there have been quite a few people that have come out with it, but one by one they've been very quietly stopped. There have been a couple of European companies. There was a Japanese company that came out with a water fuel car about 2 years ago, and now it's gone. There was a company in South Florida that had a water fuel kit that you can convert your car to run on water for about $1,000.
Oh, yeah.
They're gone.
I remember that.
So, but more and more and more people know how to do this, and so it's becoming more and more difficult to suppress it. So I suspect at some point, between the need for it, because it can neutralize radioactivity, and the fact that so many people know how to make it, it's going to become impossible, I think, to stop it. And so at some point, and the cool thing is, too, because it's an implosive force, when the water fuel is being burned as a gas, it doesn't explode, it implodes. And if you understand some fundamentals about power generation, explosive force power generation always has toxic side effects, always.
Mm-hmm.
But implosive force doesn't. And so with this technology, it's implosive force, so you can actually run a car on it, and rather than running, depending on how you run it, you can add it to existing gasoline, and it will make it run more efficiently and cleaner and all that kind of stuff on explosive force. But if you run it completely on the gas, it will run on a vacuum, and so it will not only power a vehicle non-toxically, but it will actually clean up the air and water. So you can you can take polluted water and put it in your tank, and even radioactive water, and it will put out pure H2O exhaust, and it will leave the toxins behind. And then you can burn the toxic stuff with the gas and make it non-toxic or non-radioactive.
Wow.
So it's a beautiful solution for power generation and for cleaning up the mess that we've created on this planet.
Well, yes, and there are many messes, aren't there?
There are a lot, and there's a really, really big one in Japan that's spreading all across the world, and, of course, Chernobyl and others, 2,044-plus atomic bomb detonations in the world.
And isn't there a limit to the amount of atomic devices that can be exploded on the Earth before it literally becomes unable to take another one?
That's a really good question, and I assume there is. I'm not a nuclear physicist, so I don't know that much about it, but I can tell you this. Nuclear detonations are multidimensional events.
Mm-hmm.
When they blew the first atomic bomb in Los Alamos at Trinity Point years ago in the 40s, the scientists were surprised that the yield of the bomb was much, much higher than what they had calculated, and that continued to be the case, you know, to this day, that when they originally made the calculations for the amount of energy that should be released from these nuclear detonations, what actually came out was much higher, and it's because these devices are actually bringing in energy from other dimensions of space-time. So they're bringing in this scalar energy from other dimensions of time and space and yielding a lot higher explosion. And so you're ripping through space-time in doing that. It's not something that should be done.
And it seems like that would affect other realms that could have life forms and civilizations.
Absolutely. I mean, we haven't gotten to the subject yet, but I have had contact with extraterrestrials over my lifetime, and that was one of the things that they said, was that there very often nuclear detonations will not be allowed by ETs on this planet because they will cause problems in other dimensions of space-time. And so, and there was even not too long ago in the news, one of the conventional physicists at the Hadron Collider in Europe was quoted, because they were attempting to do an experiment with a collider. And this is a big particle accelerator, and it's like gigantic. It's like, I don't know, 60-mile diameter or something. Mm-hmm. And big money being spent on this thing. And, of course, the official word is that they're trying to understand the nature of matter and energy, but they're also doing a lot of other heinous things with it.
Exactly.
But they were trying to do this one experiment, and nothing would happen. Nothing would happen. And when something should have happened. And so this physicist was quoted as saying, well, I don't know what's going on, but I guess God doesn't want us to do this. Now, this is a hardcore conventional physicist saying this. And it's probably because ETs are intervening and preventing things from happening there that could destroy this planet. Because, I mean, you could create a black hole that would suck everything into it.
Right. And according to Nassim Haramein, we're in a black hole universe.
Very true, and that was something that I didn't mention yet in relation to these monatomic elements. You know, Nassim and others are showing that we have black holes, which are really superluminal suns, inside of suns and planets. So within our sun, there's a black hole that's radiating all kinds of energy outward and pulling energy in. And in particular, it's radiating scalar energy, which is kind of like the fabric of the universe. It's as fast as a light energy. It goes much, much faster than the speed of light that we've been told is the speed of light. In reality, the speed of light is not fixed, and light can travel much, much faster than what we've been told.
Oh, yes.
And so,
yes.
At any rate, the way this energy flows, it's flowing through all matter. It's flowing through the whole 3D universe, kind of behind the scenes, in between the particles of matter, and it's passing through everything, planets, us, everything, like it's not even there. And it's going way beyond the speed of light. And it slows down and coagulates into the 3D matter and energy that we see. And so it comes out of the centers of universes and spirals outward and branches and fractals outward as it goes and is relayed through the centers of galaxies. And so that's why you see this pinwheel shape of galaxies. It's this vortex of energy, because all this energy is spiraling and vortexing. So when it gets to the centers of galaxies, it's vortexing outward, and it's relayed from the center of the galaxy, which is very, very black, and you know, scientists call it dark matter or a black hole, but it's actually superluminal light that's flowing out, and it's going so much faster than the speed of light. To us, it looks black.
Mm-hmm.
But it's relayed from the center of galaxies out to the suns around the center, and they're very, very large suns, and they have these singularities or these black holes inside of them, and then they relay it outward to the suns around them, and it goes on ad infinitum from sun to sun to sun, on outward, spiraling and fractaling as it goes, branching as it goes, out from sun to sun to sun outwards to the edges of the galaxy. And at the same time, this energy, the scalar energy, is spiraling outward and flowing through the centers of planets because they also have singularities inside of them.
Mm.
And so when it gets to us at the Earth, it's flowing up from the center of our Earth through the crust of the Earth, through the, you know, the whole mineral structure of the Earth to us, mm. and then also it's flowing down to us from the sun. And when it reaches us, it comes in through these superconducting junctures that I was talking about, through these minerals in the body. And so that's part of how we're creating our reality and how we're affected by the energy of the cosmos, or God consciousness, if you want to call it that.
Mm.
It's flowing from above and from below. And so that's why all of these ancient practices like Tai Chi or Qigong or yoga, Ayurveda, all of these methods for bringing energy up through the root chakra and up through the feet and then down from above through the crown chakra and into the head. That's why they do this, because this energy is flowing always from the sun and from the center of the Earth, and it's consciousness that brings it into form. And so if you're consciously working with it, you can manifest things faster and you can heal things.
Mm.
And so that's why, for example, people using Kundalini yoga can heal physical ailments just by working with manipulating energy, running energy up and down their spine and through their nervous system and visualizing that. And I've met quite a few people who have done that. And so so that's how it works. So when you start to understand these fundamentals and these secrets that have been kept out of all of our religious and philosophical traditions and our science, it's intentionally been kept out.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you understand how it works, then you're empowered and you cannot be controlled and manipulated.
Right. And we don't live in a world in which we can be free and not manipulated.
You can choose to that. You can choose to be, but most people
right.
don't. Most people are not that aware.
Right. Well, hopefully with shows like this and the many others in which you discuss this, it will become more easily available to people to grasp this and realize that abundant free energy is all around us and that we can work on that ourselves. We can change our own reality by making some simple changes, which I think you mentioned on your website, and you've got so many different ways and techniques. And you mentioned scalar energy. I'm not that familiar with how scalar energy works. I do know that there are scalar energy weapons that have been developed. But can you talk a little bit about that and how we can use scalar energy and what it is?
Absolutely. Yeah, scalar energy is really, it's just faster than light energy of consciousness. And so it's kind of like the Force in Star Wars. It's, as I mentioned, it's flowing through everything. Because it's multidimensional, you know, our 3D reality and our matter and the electromagnetic energy that we can see and measure is just kind of condensified or coagulated scalar energy. So this fast and light scalar energy of consciousness, or I think of it kind of like God consciousness, is flowing through not just our 3D universe, but through all dimensions of time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And it connects them all. And it's consciousness that slows it down, brings it into form. And so so it's really just superluminal light is really what it is. It's photonic energy. And it's very subtle. And because of the nature of three-dimensional reality, it's not easy to measure, and particularly measure directly, because we're kind of like composed of it, and so it's difficult to measure it when you're composed of it.
Right.
Scientists are figuring out how to measure it and how to do things with it. There's a brilliant physicist in Germany named Dr. Konstantin Meil, M-E-Y-L, and you can check out his website. It's meyl.eu. He's got very technical information, but he's proving how all this stuff works scientifically, mathematically, and experimentally. And he's got some brilliant work. He figured out, for example, what's known as the unified field equation, which Einstein and all of his contemporaries were working on their entire lives and could never figure out. This one equation that describes matter and energy at any scale, whether it's galactic or subatomic. They, you know, Einstein developed relativity, which would explain things at a quantum scale, but not at a galactic scale. And so to unify those, the thing that they're missing was multidimensionality. Einstein and his contemporaries couldn't conceive of anything being able to go faster than the speed of light.
Yeah.
And so Mile and others proved that, and the Hadron Collider, they're proving this as well, that particles and waves can go way, way beyond what we've been told is the speed of light. And so that changed the whole equation, and Mile was able to figure out, looking at the old descriptions in mathematics of this stuff, the parts that had been left out, and he was able to create a unified field equation, that one equation that describes how energy and matter work at any level, any scale, galactic or subatomic. And so other people like Nassim Harriman are bringing in all of this geometry and mathematics, also proving how things work and giving us a very clear picture of how this stuff works. But of course, conventional mainstream science is always lagging behind and catching up with it.
Well, yes, and of course, it's paid to stay that way.
Right, very much so. You know, people don't realize, but for example, you know, academic journals are designed to flush out any strategic technologies so that they can be kept secret for the powers that be and not disseminated out to the masses. That happens all the time. For example, the work with scalar energy and with these monoatomic elements, you know, this stuff was showing up, work from hard science institutes was showing up in trade journals years ago, and usually it takes about a year or two before somebody notices the strategic importance of the work, and then they will go and sequester it, either, you know, by force or by enticement. And then it disappears from the journals. And so so you have to be watching the journals if you're going to catch this stuff and see what's being done with it. But eventually it goes, you know, silent. And so that's, you know, it's one way that it's controlled. Also, patent offices, part of their function is to find any strategic technologies as they come along and sequester them away as well.
Absolutely.
So,
yep.
Yeah.
Is HARP an example of the misuse of scalar waves?
Yes, precisely. HARP is exactly that. They claim it's microwave, but it's really scalar waves. And there are other scalar technologies as well that governments use. And, of course, they say it's for observing the atmosphere and all kinds of nonsense, but obviously they're not going to spend the kind of money that they're doing on it just to observe weather phenomena. They're
creating weather, aren't they?
They're creating weather. They're modifying weather. They're using it for weapons. It can scramble people's brains. It can suppress consciousness. You could point it at a battlefield and scramble people's brainwaves so that they don't know who they are or what they're doing there. Or you could project holographic images into their heads. There's all kinds of stuff you can do with it. And so absolutely, and it's one of their biggest secrets as well. Quite a few people have died that worked in those programs attempting to expose the truth. For example, Dr. Fred Bell, about a year ago, was killed when he got on Jesse Ventura's show Conspiracy Theory, and he had been one of the architects of the scalar weapons program for the United States, and so he went public with it, and the dangers, because one of these weapons could destroy an entire continent. It had incredible amounts of energy. And it's kind of like the Death Star in Star Wars. It's like, you know, we could destroy the whole planet with one of these things.
Wow.
And so Sir Fred Bell came out with all this information about it, and he didn't think that he could be killed because he was, you know, he had so much knowledge about it, and he figured he was too valuable to be killed, but within 12 hours he was dead.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently killed by an energy weapon.
Yeah, he was on our radio show. And when he was murdered.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a real sad story. I've met other people. I've met lots of other scientists and people who have been threatened or who have been attacked by energy weapons.
There was what about 911? 911
right,
seems to have been...
Exactly.
Yeah, that was the reverse use of some kind of energy weapon, energy beam.
Exactly, that's what you know, Dr. Judy Wood is bringing evidence out about that, and it certainly could occur with a scalar technology, because scalar energy is the fundamentals of matter and energy, and you can, just as well as you can combine it to create matter and energy, you can disassociate it with it,
mm-hmm.
which is how you can also neutralize radiation, nuclear radiation with it. Thomas Bearden, who was a NASA nuclear engineer, he developed a technology for neutralizing radioactivity with scalar energy, and he even applied for a patent on it. And if you Google Thomas Bearden neutralized radiation or neutralized radioactivity, you can find a link to it, to his patent application.
Huh.
And he's in hiding, of course, because he's got multiple technologies that could save the planet.
You know, it seems like there's so many people that are in that position that there could be a kind of a tipping point when there will be a moment that those people will be allowed to somehow, they'll just come out with this information. It will be so overwhelming and so quick that the powers that be won't have time to round everybody up. And some of that has to be able to get through, because we are in lockdown here, with, you know, locked into oil, gas, nuclear, which is one of the most destructive forces on Earth. And then there's all the nuclear waste that is being shuffled around and used for covert purposes. And it's destroying our planet, and it will destroy all of us if we're, you know, if we're still around after GMO and chemtrails and everything else they're throwing at us.
Right. Well, I think that's part of the agenda. From everything that I've seen, you know, between working in the medical system and working with scalar technology myself, there definitely appears to be an agenda to reduce the population of the Earth by billions.
Yes.
And the Codex Alimentarius, for example, is one case, and they even admit in their own documentation that when fully implemented, it would reduce the population by 3 to 5 billion people.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely an agenda to reduce population, and that's why I believe that they're allowing all of this radiation and all of this toxicity out into the environment. It's you know, it's not that it can't be cleaned up. It could be cleaned up very quickly within weeks or months.
It's intentionally being released to create the effects that they want.
Yes, that's my belief. Everything from what
I've seen. That's my belief, too.
Because I've seen multiple, there's about 7 or 8 different technologies for neutralizing radioactivity.
Mm-hmm,
And if you Google that, just, you know, Google neutralize radioactivity, and you'll see, you know, different people with solutions. And it's like you said, there are lots of people waiting in the wings that have these various technologies, and most of them are not very complicated. You know, anybody with who's mechanically inclined can actually build a lot of these technologies. So I think exactly what you said is going to occur, where so many people are going to become aware of how to build this stuff, and already are, actually. I mean, if you go to YouTube and look, there's tons of people making devices and things, free energy and all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah, very clever.
So I think that's it. You know, there's going to be so many people that know how to do this. They're just not going to participate in the old paradigm and create free energy or whatever for themselves. And, in fact, that's going on. I mean, I know there are lots of people who are neutralizing radiation out of the sky and chemtrails, and that's one of the things I was teaching and talking about until I got threatened. But it's absolutely possible with a few things from Home Depot and some stuff off of eBay. You know, and so more and more people are learning how to do that, so it's not going to be able to be stopped. And Buckminster Fuller said it really beautifully, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said that you'll never get anywhere trying to change the old paradigm by pointing out its flaws. You just have to create a new paradigm that's so much better that everybody will choose that instead.
Yeah,
and that's
right.
Really what we have to do.
Absolutely. That's it, you know, and so many people waste energy either talking about, complaining, or trying to fight, which is
right.
just
pointing
making
out the
that
problem.
Side stronger. Yeah, the more you fight, the more the stronger the other side gets. So,
precisely.
You have to pull the rug out.
There need to be more people like filmmakers and people like you and journalists and correspondents to bring out a vision of what's possible and what can be rather than the problems, because we all know the problems. There's plenty of people documenting the problems.
But there
aren't many people creating a vision for the solutions.
Well, look at the Venus Project. I mean, that may not be perfect, but Jacques, I can't remember
Fresco.
His last name.
Yeah, Jacques Fresco.
Has some wonderful ideas, and like I said, it may not be the solution, but he's definitely a futurist, and it seems that his heart is in the right place.
Right. And Jacques Fresco is one of my favorites, and he's created an incredible vision. He's right here in Florida where I'm at.
Wonderful.
I've got to go down and visit with him.
Wonderful.
There's also many intentional communities like Domenher in Italy, which is a world-renowned, magnificent model for living in harmony and community sustainably.
Wow.
And the Falco, the man who started it, unfortunately, he just died a few days ago. But back in the 70s, he was working with scalar energy devices. And very simple ones, very, wires and twist coils and crystals and things, but very simple looking, but very sophisticated technology. And so those are the kinds of models that we need to get out more into the public eye so that people can envision a positive, uplifting, empowered future.
Absolutely, and of course that would mean less television, less tuning into those news shows and the talking heads.
Exactly.
And then of course you've got the Russians, who are way ahead of us in so many different ways, and they are developing pyramids that are effective as the ones that that were built in Egypt, and they're using them to store food for children. And they're going to be running tests on it to see there will be no GMO food allowed to be stored in the pyramids. And they claim that if pyramids were placed at certain strategic points around the globe, that what's happening where we're at in the galactic chain of events, that the disturbing effects of going through this particular area would be minimized, and we would have a raise in consciousness as well as energy. So they're working hard to build these pyramids and test them and get other countries to look at that as a possibility and as a solution.
I'm very familiar with that.
Yeah.
The Russians actually are the modern-day keepers of the knowledge of monoatomics as well. But Russian physicist Alexander Golod, for your listeners, that's G-O-L-O-D. You can go onto YouTube and you can search on him and see this 141-foot-high pyramid that he built outside of Moscow. Golod had millions of dollars at his disposal because he worked for the Russian government. He was a Cold War physicist, and when the Cold War ended, he had a budget, but he didn't have to spend it on developing new weapon systems, and so he started studying pyramids. And one thing that he discovered was that all of the pyramids around the planet that have been built by various ancient cultures, they're all part of one large planetary scalar grid system.
Yes.
And, even though they may have been built at different times by different cultures, somebody who had to have had at least air flight capabilities, if not space travel capabilities, oversaw the construction of them. And he's shown
absolutely.
That. And so he started studying that. He built this giant pyramid, and he is using pyramids to neutralize nuclear radiation in the soil and in the groundwater and in the air, and for a very large area, like 350-kilometer diameter. Also normalizing the weather, because it creates this big vortex of energy that will send a scalar vortex up into the sky, and it will pull these pollutants out into space and not drop them back down onto the ground. I actually developed a power device, a very small power device that will do that. clear about 150 mile radius of or diameter of chemtrails and pollution.
Have you heard of Valery Uvarov and the $2 billion pyramid complex in Siberia?
No, I've heard about the pyramid complex, but not Uvarov.
I'll send you a link to it. Okay. I accidentally found out from a guest, Dr. Carmen Bolter, who's an Egyptologist, and she had gone over to Russia, and they showed her these pyramids and showed how they were done, and it's just phenomenal, using huge crystals in the base and certain acrylic cements. I mean, it is absolutely phenomenal, and you don't hear a thing about it over here, so... This is quite interesting stuff, and, you know...
There are people here that are doing that in different ways, though, because there's something called organite, which I haven't mentioned yet, but you can
take... Yeah, let's talk about that.
Okay, because what pyramids really are, they are scalar wave antennas. They're transceivers, so they transmit and receive scalar energy that's flowing through the cosmos. And so if you think about it, you've got this pyramid shape, and usually, particularly the ancient ones, they're made out of stone, and they have very specific angles and geometry, and they're flat, you know, their bottom is laying flat on the Earth. Well, if you understand that you've got this black hole at the center of the Earth radiating mm-hmm. scalar energy upward to the surface, mm-hmm. and it comes to a pyramid, the pyramid will focus it. And can do things with it. And likewise, the scalar energy coming from the sun, it will come down to the pyramid and concentrate and focus it as well. And in fact, it'll create a scalar energy field around it, and that has positive benefits if you structure the pyramid so that it's tuned to certain frequencies.
Mm.
And so all of these sacred geometric shaped pyramids with the different angles on the corners, those correspond to fractions of measurements that we find in the galaxy and in the cosmos. It may be a fraction of the Earth's diameter, or the fraction of the distance between the sun and the Earth, or various distances, and so they can pick up certain wavelengths of scalar energy. And as it turns out, these ancient pyramids made of stone were made out of stone that was high in, guess what, these monatomic minerals.
Mm.
So they knew very well what they were doing. And Nassim Harriman even pointed out that the Egyptian pyramids, they discovered artifacts and human hairs and things inside of stones that were cut from the pyramids, and discovered that the reason that the stones were able to be joined together so closely and have such large stones, you know, single stones, was not because they quarried these gigantic 200-ton stones that even modern-day cranes can barely lift, but what they did was they basically created stones from a pourable concrete that was very high in these ormus elements.
Yes.
And so that doesn't take any high tech, you know. I mean, you can do that in your backyard.
Well, that, yes, you could. And some people are, too.
They are. Many, many people are. And I can tell your listeners some basic things that they can do to do this. But crystals and certain rocks and minerals, particularly volcanic rocks and minerals, they are very high in these monoatomic elements.
Hmm.
And basalt, for example, is very high in monoatomic elements. Volcanic rock or ash, very high in monoatomic elements. If you go to YouTube and you search on Iceland volcano lightning, you can see videos of the that volcano in Iceland that was spewing ash all over Europe that everybody was ticked off about. Well, that was a wonderful remineralization event, but it's also spraying ormus all over the place. And because ormus is superconducting, when it's coming out of the volcano, it creates these superconducting fields, and they want to ground out. And so if you look at those videos on YouTube, you'll see lightning shooting up out of the volcano out into the atmosphere.
Mm.
And, of course, scientists are baffled. Oh, we don't understand. Well, it's because the ash is superconducting. It's got these ormus elements in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if you simply know that volcanic rocks are high in monoatomics, you can take any kind of volcanic rock and embed it in concrete or pyramids or different types of devices, and you can create scalar fields and scalar waves. And
wow.
if you structure them like the pyramids with certain geometry, they have very beneficial frequencies, and they can be healing, and they can clear radiation and chemtrails and all kinds of stuff.
Wow.
So here in the United States, there was a man named Wilhelm Reich back in the 20s and 30s and 40s and 50s who was he was a psychiatrist, and he was actually a contemporary of Sigmund Freud's, and he was studying sexual aberrations, and in the course of studying that, he disagreed with Freud. Freud thought it was ego and id and in the mind and the consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And what Reich was seeing was that there was this energy coming from somewhere that was altering people in a way that was causing these aberrations. And so he started studying it, and what he found out was it wasn't just sexual energy, it was this energy that kind of flowed through everything, and it manifested in a lot of different ways.
Oh.
And so he called it orgone, but actually it was scalar energy. And he made a lot of really brilliant discoveries with it, and one of the things he found was that he built these devices that kind of looked like these big cannons, and he could point them up into the sky and create scalar waves, or orgone, as he called it, and it would normalize the weather. So if there was a drought, it would end the drought and make it rain. If it rained too much, it would make it stop. If there were violent storms or whatever, it would neutralize them.
Well, you know what?
And,
we're almost running out of time. I didn't want to stop you where you are, but that gives us an excuse to come back and do another show. I could talk to you for hours, and I didn't get a chance to talk to you about your...
I apologize, too. I thought we had 2 hours, so I would have been more successful.
Come back for another hour at your convenience?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. That'd be wonderful. And before we go, I want to thank you for being on the show and for sharing so much with us. And have you mentioned your website and so people can find you and your blog and all of that?
Okay. My main website is freshandalive.com, and that's mainly where I sell products for natural health solutions to maintain health and optimize health or heal from whatever amid this day and age. And then my blog is beyondrawfood.com. That's mainly where informational stuff is. And if you want the latest information that I'm playing with, then friend me on Facebook, because I'm always posting new cutting-edge stuff on Facebook. If you go to...
Okay. We're going to have to end the show. The next show is going to be coming on shortly. So
okay.
I'll be in touch with you about coming back to do another one. We can get the near-death story and the ET story maybe in on that one.
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much, Ken. You've been fantastic. I really appreciate
Thank you
coming
man.
On. All right.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.